Thank you for this opportunity. The title, Manager Corporate Information, sounds really flash, but it doesn't mean that I manage information across the whole university, even though obviously, according to the last speakers, I probably should have more of a hand in that. Really, it's for my own unit. So, I work in the governance support unit. I am technically the university's records manager, even though it's no longer part of my title. Corporate information was used because I now have the pleasure of also managing the official publications, which is like your annual report, and the my own unit's website, which deals with a lot of the compliance requirements for publishing online. So hence the corporate information tag. I tried to get records into the title, but it didn't seem to go down that well, but it is definitely in the PD. Now, I'm not really going to be up here touting that we've got any best practice going on in relation to putting risk into our records program. I like to think we're making some good strides in that area, but following the last two presentations, I can see we have obviously a lot more of a way to go, and we are still learning as we go along. You have got some handouts there, and I believe they will be on the web for people who are listening. They probably look a bit disjointed, and that's because it's just samples, but I'll mention them as I go through the slide. Okay, just really I'm talking about how we've embedded risk into our records management program, so the best opportunity of explaining that is to also give you a bit of an idea of the university and where the program sits. University records is part of the government support unit, as I mentioned. We actually fall under the registrar, who used to be part of the senior executive but is now under the senior executive, so there's a bit of a change there too. But we fall into the Deputy Vice Chancellor of Corporate Services. Fortunate thing about that, so does the IT area, so there's at least some links now coming into there. We have 6.5 dedicated full-time positions. I probably now have to classify myself as the half, because I'm doing GIPA, privacy, publications and web, as well as records. So if I cut my time up, I'm probably only about half. Those 6.5 of us have to manage a devolved system, decentralised or devolved, whichever is the best word. Across two campuses, we have Ku'ringai and we have a city campus, but the city campus is spread over multiple blocks around the Haymarket, Ultimo area. We have 7 faculties, 8 if you include the new School of Graduate Health, which has got faculty status, and 41 business units. In amongst that, if you break it down into individual schools and departments and areas, we've got over 200 areas. So you have 6.5 people trying to manage 200 individual areas. 974 academic staff and 1,434 support staff, and that's the annual report from 2010. So quite a variety of areas, and obviously a lot of risks involved in such a small amount of people trying to manage such a devolved system and ensure good record keeping is in place. So, our approach, basically, initially, and we're talking initially as being when I first started around 2001, was basically implementing systems across all areas. And we were obviously looking paper-based when we were talking 2001, and technically still fairly heavily looking at that area, as well as digital, which I'll touch on a bit later. But more recently, we're really starting to look at high-risk business activities and high-risk areas and targeting those, because it's almost impossible for us to just do a blanket approach across everything, even though we're trying to do that, but we're also trying to look at those high-risk areas. To follow on a bit of what from Anne said, he's looking at roles and responsibilities. 10 years ago, we established a primary records contact in every faculty and unit, so we're talking about those 7 faculties and those 41 units who are responsible with a point of contact with their areas. I'll probably admit some of them don't realise that they actually are responsible as the point of contact, but that is their role, and we actually now have a statement in our position descriptions, which is our standard position description template. If you are the primary contact, this must be put into your position description. So our challenge is to ensure people know that level above that, that they should be putting that in their staff position descriptions. We also have record contacts in every business unit to facilitate record keeping activities. So this is when we get into the 200 plus business units. We have currently their secondary contacts, but we're hoping to call them records program contacts, who are responsible for assessing how records are managed in their area, fairly senior in that area where we can get one, or local record contacts, who are the ones who might do the work for areas, interact with TRIM. They primarily, only 90% of the users of TRIM are the record contacts, not every single user of the university. And that's an issue with more resourcing of licenses than anything else. Now, how do we embed the risk into this? I find it's a bit of a chicken and egg. I'm not quite sure where to start. So some of this will, I guess, interlink with others. Obviously, we put in a risk, our records management program before we developed our Canada Disaster Plan, but our Canada Disaster Plan includes our risk management program as a preventative measure. So it sort of, you know, circles onto itself. We don't call it a Canada Disaster Plan. I call it a risk management framework and disaster recovery plan. We had one when I first started there that covered the university archives and the art curatorial unit, and that's only because they lived right next door to the archives, but we needed one to cover all the university's business units. It is primarily focused on hard copy and technology dependent things like physical objects, DVDs and so forth. We have to draw a line somewhere, and we're looking at IT to manage the disaster recovery operations in relation to the digital environment. So really what I was looking at when we developed that was an approach that would cover every area. So we're developing a disaster plan for 200 disparate business units, and it's, so it's a reasonably high-level approach. As part of the risk management framework in that plan, I have five areas listed. There is elements of a lot of this information on our website at the moment. I'll touch on that right at the end. Risk management program being one of the main ones, and that's primarily our assessment activities. Obviously, having the program in place at the moment, so we're not just looking at the physical disasters to records. We're looking at the elements of risk involved in not having them or not managing them properly. So the risk records management program and the assessment approach, which is what I'm going to be focusing on a bit in a moment, is our primary element. Good old-fashioned vital records program that everyone's used to having. Our repository and archive management programs as well as a way how we manage risk and prevent it in relation to how people manage their archives. Our destruction program we consider to be a risk management approach in how long we keep records and how people manage the disposal processes. And new, which is only touched on in one paragraph to date because we're still implementing the standard, is our digital record keeping program. So I've thrown it into the framework, but because it's not there dealing with disaster recovery from a digital perspective as yet, I haven't really elaborated it on much, but I will touch on that at the end. We've been a bit of a double-edged sword, been a bit fortunate, and I don't know whether it's fortunate or unfortunate, to be on the Audit and Risk Committee's radar, I guess you could say. And this is a high-level committee of the university who deals with the university's audit schedule, and we have an external, internal sort of audit program. The people who do the audits used to be internal, but they've now outsourced to their own company and then come back and work for us. It's a bit of an unusual situation. But we're on their agenda, which is a good thing in one sense. I do get to meet the auditor, the main auditor, about issues of fraud and prevention, not that they found things, but they find potential risks. And it gives me an opportunity to say, well, if you're trying to prevent fraud, well, where are the records? And do you realise that this has got to be looked at and this has got to be looked at? And he seems to be taking a lot of this on board now, which is really good for someone who thought that it was quite appropriate to keep all his records on the share drive. But what did happen out of this was the very first time that since I've been there, is we had a records audit of the university in 2009 run by the internal auditor program. Picked out key business units, which I will not mention, and very common issues across it. And a lot of it was the sustainability of their record management systems, their staff awareness that they're supposed to actually keep records in the appropriate environments, and our inability to ensure they're doing that, which was one of the key issues. So what I'm actually going to focus on is that element, the key outcome of restructuring our assessment program. So the history of our assessment program, 2001 to 2005, and there's a few staff here who have actually been involved in this at varying points as contractors on the university. We started in 2001, we'd go in to every business unit, we're talking 200 plus areas every year, to assess how they're managing their records with on-site visits. It wasn't an audit technically because we had no clout to do anything, it was more of an assessment monitoring activity and try to improve how they were working. We lost the temporary resources assigned to get this program up and running around that time, so in 2006 we moved to a self-assessment approach where we would just facilitate, say, fill this in and send it back to us. We're still doing a lot of work though in chasing people up, have you done this, have you done that, and looking, and is it worth doing it if you're not going to look at the results and try to improve their practices? If there's just a tick and a flick and no one's really assessing it, then it's not doing its job. But we did do all business units in 2006. After that, though, we found it really dropped off, 10% a year. And those areas were high-risk areas, so we would choose the ones where we felt there was going to be a bigger risk if they fell down than not. And the problem with that approach is we found that we were visiting the same areas every year, and the areas that never got visited started to come up into a more high-risk category. The longer they got neglected, if you want to use that term, the more chance they are to fall into a high-risk area. This is the reason why the assessment program was identified out of that records audit, because there wasn't enough happening to ensure these areas who were falling down actually improved the way they were managing their records, or that we even identified that there was a problem. So the new records assessment program, late 2010, and the 2009 audit, late 2010, universities worked very slowly, and it did take some time to develop how we were going to implement this, and late 2010 was really more of a pilot. Technically, formally it started this year. It was resourced, fortunately, more so out of the fact that we had a fairly senior vacant position in our unit that we managed to keep the money for, and our director felt, well, I'll just shift that across and we'll put someone on for the 12 months and review it after that point. Fortunately, now I can say that that movement's been a permanent move, and we now have actually our assessment program advisor on as a permanent staff member who is also a 2IC for records in general and has other duties for training and so forth. So we've managed to expand that and make that a permanent role, which has been excellent. So it's a risk-focused schedule of assessment, and I'm going to go through the schedule in a moment. It is still a self-assessment activity, but we're finding that it's a self-assessment with a lot of help. It's not just do this and send it back. There is risk assessments involved as well. A lot of liaison and monitoring while they're doing the work, training while they're doing the work, and monitoring the completion and what results they've got so we can try to cycle that back into planning. We have planning and review processes involved as well. As I said, it's no use putting in a program if you're not going to go back and look at the outcomes and ensure that people actually put those elements in place. So the self-assessment schedule, it's a triennial schedule. We felt there's no way in hell we're going to get around to 200 business units in a year, even with a dedicated staff member. Why were we putting in a yearly schedule for an area which is very low risk, which doesn't generate many records? And for some of our business units, they claim they generate no records. Compared to maybe our student administration or our HR area or something of that nature, which has obviously got a lot higher risk issues. So we developed the schedule based on levels of risk and our resources to actually implement and keep it going. And part of that was to look at having a yearly and a bi-yearly and a triennial schedule of audits for different areas. So who falls into our yearly schedule? We don't use a really sort of sophisticated risk assessment tool to determine that, but I did put my own unit in the yearly schedule, primarily because they deal with, we have student discipline matters, not in my group, but in the unit as a whole, but we also deal with the university's major decision-making committees, so there's obviously a very important aspect to ensure that that's captured. But what we basically did is we looked at areas which had critical university functions where they're keeping the records centrally. And when I use the term centrally, and probably the best example would be the HR unit. HR keeps the HR records for every unit of the university. It'd be very different if every unit had to keep their own HR records. But because you have a centralised business function, which is fairly high risk if it falls over, we considered them on the yearly schedule. And it's the same with our student admin area, that the business units of the university don't just all keep records, they have records on students, but the core student record is kept by one unit. So they're a high risk area than a small school in a faculty might be. Our bi-yearly assessments were areas we considered that were still of a high-risk nature, but they really aren't keeping centralised collections within our own unit. We actually put the university senior executive in that group, and the reason we put them there is because we do their records for them. So we figured that we can at least deal with them on a day-to-day basis. We can pick up issues as they arise, but we'll do the more formal assessment every second year. Everybody else falls into the three-year schedule. So how we actually run this program, they do get a self-assessment tool, and one of the documents I handed out has some elements of that. I'll get to it in a moment. These are the headings of that assessment. It's a bit circular and it involves some other elements, and they sort of feed back into some other programs. We make sure we ensure, our responsibilities delegated properly, but not just yes or no. I want you to list who are your key record contacts in your business unit, how are they delegated, and what training have they actually undertaken. We sort of mandate, although it's not formally mandated, but through this it is, that our local record contacts have to have done TRIM training, have to have done record contact training and so forth, whereas someone a bit, our secondary contact may only have had to have done more of the awareness and so forth. They may not have to have done the archiving training, for instance, because they don't do that work, but the local contact would, so they have to do that training. So we have it sort of where a way is that not only do you tell us that you've done it, but we want to see that you've done it. Planning, we want to make sure people actually do their records management plans, but being a new program and we're actually asking them to do that, they haven't got them yet, so this will probably flow in more into our future scheduling. But we do ask them to identify their business activities, and really what we're looking at there is to say, it's all well and good to tell us you keep records, but we want to know what you're supposed to be keeping records about, so we can actually ensure you actually are thinking about where the records are kept. Because one of the questions we ask is, where are the records relating to this business activity? And we want people to start thinking that, well, these are kept by HR, so I don't have to keep them, or these are in this business system, oops, we're not doing anything about that. Creation of official files, are they filing documents? And these are more hard copy questions, but we do refer them to some digital issues. If you're using digital systems that are approved, you don't have to answer that question. If all your systems are digital and so forth, it can get quite complex. Managing their physical files, storage of records, we're linking that into, and it'll actually work well with the new standard of physical storage next year, because we do actually have a risk assessment of storage, and they're required to list all the areas they store records in and whether they've been approved for storage and whether they've done the assessment. And that's another thing that actually comes out of that an assessment process for storage. Security and confidentiality about their records. Digital record keeping systems, there's new questions in there about digital record keeping, and again that links to an attachment which says, have you assessed your systems? What do you have? And have you assessed them and have they been approved? I'm going to get into digital record keeping systems at the end, but what we found is we had a way of trying to implement the standard, but we knew we weren't capturing everything. So one way of trying to ensure we could pick up all those odd bods around the areas, oh, we've got a spreadsheet on this, or we've got this FileMaker Pro database, the major system areas don't know these things exist, is at a unit level we want areas to identify all of these sorts of systems and whether they've been assessed, so we can actually pick them up through another process. Archiving and destruction, the usual, you know, have you planned your destruction activities, have you destroyed anything, are you authorising your destruction, and all of those sorts of things. And risk management, disaster prevention, do you have contact lists, have you developed priority recovery plans, and so forth for your area. Now I do have, if I can work out where we are here, my hidden little hyperlinks that are in the document will refer to one of the handouts. I believe for the people listening in, these will be on the web. Now, these are on the web, actually, as full documents, and what you have is just a sample, just so you can see the approach that we've taken. I've just given you as an example of this one, is from our self-assessment on the responsibilities and delegations. The thing that we put in there is, have your record contacts been formally delegated their responsibilities, and it's not just you're doing it. Go and do this, but it is in their work plan, is it in their position description? Because when we go in, and we talk to them, they say, well, no one told me I had to do this. So we're trying to ensure that this is actually formalised. Not the usual risk assessment approach of likelihoods and yes and no's and so forth. It's basically is just a yes, we've done it, or no, we haven't, and some remedial actions. Now, even though we liaise with these areas about what they should do, some areas are actually taking it on board to just do these assessments without us even knowing, and we want them to have a list of possible remedial actions so they don't have to then ring us and say, well, yeah, it said no, but what do we do? That they can look at this and actually put some actions in place. Obviously, part of this is discussing the delegations and putting it in work plans or position descriptions. But as I mentioned earlier, we do try to link that to, we want to know who these people are. We want to know their name, positions and email addresses. We want to know what level of training they've done. Now, if they've actually not ticked certain training that they should have done, one of the requirements of that is that they have to actually put that into their plan to ensure these people do get trained. Now, this will be the tricky part. Getting back to the there we go. Okay. So, just secondary to that is our risk storage, record storage risk assessment tool. And this is your more you know, traditional risk assessment on physical damage to records that Ant had mentioned earlier, but probably not looking at the big sort of statewide picture, but just things we do have a bit of control over. Things like the environmental conditions, sun, heat, temperature, fire and water hazards, obviously working in a university environment, that can actually exist in a lot of the research areas in particular, or areas just, I had one area once holding records in a basement, which used to be an old bank vault that flooded regularly, so they're keeping all their records in plastic boxes, and I thought that was an interesting approach. The location of their storage areas in particular, we're talking about them being dedicated storage locations and so forth, and the method of storage. Are you keeping them all just boxed up on the floor, or you do have proper storage facilities, compactor units or whatever? So what we're really trying to do is pick out the more traditional risks to records in how they're storing them, as well as the previous one, which works out how they're actually creating and capturing them and controlling them. I do have a link here too, by the look of it, to just a sample question in our couple of sample questions. This is more traditional risk-based approach. It looks like this one might be on the single page. I like this one because this is quite a unique one for universities. The proximity of your record storage area to laboratories and workshops. Now, are you actually within your laboratory? Are you keeping your records sitting right next to your chemical storage locations and so forth? And really what I'm trying to do in this is explain the issues that are involved in good storage of records. Where are you keeping them? Yes, no, high, medium, low is the usual thing of, well, yes, they are here and the likelihood of a problem is high or so forth, and some remedial action. So again, we're trying to build remedial action into all our documentation at a very basic level, but it's something people can look at and say, oh, I can do that, and might have to go ahead and do it without actually having to talk to us and sort of get us involved in over 200 areas trying to improve how they manage their records. The bottom one I do like, because this is common, are you using a dumping ground? Is it a dumping ground for all sorts of material, equipment, etc., that are not part of the records and they're not being managed properly? Always been a big issue at the Kringai campus because it's been around for so many years that we've still got rooms out there which have stuff in there since before UTS became UTS, and it was the Kringai College of Advanced Education, with areas who just stumble across these rooms and say, oh, we've got all of these records in here, and you open it up and you've got all sorts of old technology from 20 or 30 years ago and all sorts of stuff. Happening a lot less, and this is the reason why, that we're able to actually get people to identify, yes, I have a storage area, and we can try to help them clean those out. So, next is, you've got your assessment, you've done your storage risk assessment, now is the planning. So that's the first stage, is doing the assessment processes, and then the second stage is them developing a plan. Having them develop a plan came out of the 2009 audit. It's something we hadn't actually required areas to do before, and we had a sort of an idea of how we wanted to plan records from a high-level approach to comply with the State Records Act, but not a business unit level or a faculty unit level. So areas are required to develop a plan, and the plan will be in place for as long as their assessment schedule is. So if they're on a yearly schedule, they've got a yearly plan. If they're on a three-yearly schedule, they've got a three-yearly plan, and they've got to have to assess it every year. The plan, these are the elements of the plan. There's a communication plan, and that covers things like how are you going to train your staff in record keeping, how often are they going to be made aware of their requirements, how often are you going to tell us when those people change or you're restructuring or so forth. And we try to build that into that so they can plan if those activities are going to occur. Routine record keeping, the usual creating records in the first place, lodging vital records and so forth. So the other ones are really a way of trying to mitigate the risks that they've identified in their assessment activities. So they've got their assessment done, we've worked with them to develop it, we've identified key issues, we've referred back to them what they need to include in their plan, they'll write up the plan and they will develop, hopefully, projects to say, no, we're not capturing this record, or we're not keeping our records very well in our storage locations, we need to put in a project. So we have a section for them to pull in the issues in their self-assessment, we have a section to pull in the issues from their storage risk assessment. We also enable them to put in specific projects if they're planning to restructure or move their offices in that particular period of time, and any other projects if they know that they've got a legal new piece of legislation coming in that they should actually be planning record keeping issues around, then they can put that in as well. Now obviously this is not going to capture everything, but it's a way for them to focus on what's important and try to actually get some formalisation in place for that. the office move one, I think, will be quite critical in the long medium term. The university is going through a major campus redevelopment. Anyone who's been around UTS will see this happening. And we're looking at, what, a 13-year project or something? It is very big. And new buildings going up all over the place. They're moving people, offices here and student training there and such. I think I wouldn't be surprised if half the university is going to be affected by office moves at some point within the next 3 years at least, or further down the track. So that's actually going to be quite a critical issue for us. But it doesn't stop there. It's not something that's just set and forget, which is obviously why this has come up in the first place in our auditing program. The university has a planning and improvement framework quality cycle. Plan, do, review and improve, the big catchphrase that's out there. If we want to sort of put that into the context of what we're doing, we're really in the review stage. We're still doing and we're still planning, but we're also reviewing the outcome of this year's assessments, the problems that we've faced in putting it in place, the risks that that's going to pose on keeping it going in the future. One of them, which is quite notable, is one area of the university which is on a yearly cycle of assessment has taken 6 months to do it. Technically, it's like painting the harbour bridge. We need to look at another solution for that business unit and whether we can split them up into sizable chunks. Review our tools and keep feeding in. People didn't understand what this meant and we're getting the wrong information, or we need to now focus on this element of risk and keep redesigning our tools. Reviewing the schedule, again, this area which is on a yearly schedule is obviously not working, but it has to be done every year, so we need to review how that will be managed. Monitor and review the fact people are not writing up a plan and sticking it in their drawer on the share drive and never looking at it again, which is going to be an interesting one, especially for those 3-year cycles. And incorporating those issues into training, and that was one of the key reasons I decided to shift the training of records into this assessment program advisor position, because they're the ones who are there, that person's there identifying the issues, and people don't know about this, people don't know about this, and I'm starting to pick up on a trend. How can we feed that into our training so that these things don't happen as we go forward? Now, I do have a few things I wanted to mention on my notes, but I have actually skipped past them, but that's all right. What we're also, I guess, trying to do in relation to assessing targeting risk areas, and it's only really come up in very recent terms. There's a couple of examples. Talking about our quality audits, the university's actually currently planning for its... the university people understand, and I'll explain it in a minute, but the cycle of AUQUA audits, and that's an old term now that's been replaced by PEXA. We love our acronyms in this university sector. So basically it's the Australian University Quality Audit Program that was managed by federal legislation. That we're on the end cycle of, and that legislation's been changed. It's now the Tertiary Education Quality Sector Audit or something like that. I don't know the exact name. Basically, you've got an independent body out there auditing the university's business functions and auditing what we say we do as an organisation to see if we actually do that and how well we do that. And it's been expanded to actually include non-university tertiary education, and that's why it's no longer the university quality audits. It's just the tertiary education quality. We're going through that at the moment, and we've done our trial, and we're about to head into our real audit around May, June next year. And I had a presentation provided, I was in a presentation yesterday of the person managing this program, and a very, very key thing that he kept mentioning was we have to provide the evidence that we're actually doing what we're doing, and we have to provide the documentation, and I'll be out there looking for all of this sort of stuff. And I think, well, that's all well and good, but I'll be surprised if it's all where it should be, but you'll probably find what you need. But it really highlighted to me another opportunity to actually get into that business unit and say, can we actually ride the coattails of the outcomes of this? Because the outcomes will be the university needs to address this, this, this and this. And over the next 5 years, because it's a 5-year audit program, you need to collect the information that will prove you've done this, this, this and this. Because in the meeting, he's sitting there saying, he brought up a couple of slides and one of the staff said, oh, geez, that was so long ago. We don't do anything like that anymore. We do this, this and that. And he said, oh, well, it'd be good if we can get that documentation. So I'm seeing there's some synergies in actually getting some involvement in that program. And another interesting thing with that particular team, and it sort of leads on with the other presenters, is the the project manager for that team is doing this collaboration on planning for this in SharePoint. So off I sort of, in my digital record keeping hat, an assessment program, went up to meet him to work out what he's doing, and he claims that anything that's important is being printed for the official file. But I did find from him that, oh, but they probably want to look at this in 5 years' time when they start planning the next audit. And I said, and is it going to be there? And he says, I don't know, I won't be here. And he won't, because he's seconded on his role. And I said, well, how will they know where to actually, who, because SharePoint's one of those beasts where the administration is done at the business unit level, it's not usually done at a high level. Who's going to be administering this site? Who's going to have access to it? And he sort of had this blank look on his face. Oh, that's going to be really important. I said, oh, well. So we are hoping maybe we can actually use that too as a pilot of seeing how we can integrate SharePoint and capture records from that into Trim, because yes, no, we haven't done that because SharePoint's not very heavily embedded as yet. So really a lot of what we do is, I guess it's, we try to be proactive, but we pick up opportunities where we can, and I guess, as you said, fight the battles. Another opportunity that has arisen recently, which leads on a bit too from the previous speakers, is our new compliance project that's happening. We had a couple of ladies up on our floor, actually, and I'll be sitting right outside my office in a couple of weeks, which will be very handy, who are developing a compliance framework for the university. And what this will be doing is listing all the different pieces of legislation and the risk levels and who's responsible for them and da-da-da-da. If someone said to me, oh, but records is not a, records doesn't have a lot of teeth. And if you said, oh, if we're looking at it purely from the State Records Act, doesn't have a lot of teeth. If you're looking at it maybe reputationally, yes, but if you look at it from the perspective of complying with the other legislation, it has a lot of teeth. If you say, well, if you don't have the records that you require for the new work, health and safety legislation that's coming in next year, that you can prove that you've been doing the proper monitoring and ensuring safe work environments and so forth, then there are very serious penalties, including jail time, involved in that. So while State Records Act itself might not put you in jail, well, that will, and if you don't have the records to support that, no, there are serious consequences. So when I was speaking to these ladies, they thought that was quite an interesting perspective. And what I found quite interesting is that they're looking at putting the records management awareness in as part of the new online training modules that they're doing as a mandatory requirement, because they've seen that this is a high level of risk as well. So keeping good relation. In fact, I was actually on their panel for their employment, so I've got a sort of a good array of getting in there and talking to them about this and saying this is very important, but that's another element where we can actually start embedding something in so that it just happens without us having to go in afterwards. Okay. What I did want to sort of also touch on was digital record keeping being, but it's still happening, I guess you could say, from an implementation perspective. But as I said, we do touch on this in our self-assessment program because it's a way of on an ongoing basis, picking up where people are just going ahead and doing things without letting us know. I had one area ring me, because I'm a privacy officer, and I had an area ring me a couple of months ago. We want to talk to you about privacy for this new system we're putting in place. So I met with him about privacy, and then I threw on the records and said, but have you considered X? Oh, well, he was the system designer, because a lot of our things happen in-house. No, and we did manage to get all of the people together, talk to them about their systems compliance, assess it, and so forth. So at least we know that they're considering what has to be done, and at the moment they're considering using it as a tool, but considering in a hard copy until they can work out maybe putting that stuff into Trim electronically, just so they can get this process up and running, because they're, I guess, deadline doesn't match our timing to actually do a full assessment or amend, because they're already halfway through developing the system and so forth. But we need to be able to pick these up earlier, and we're hoping we can do that through the self-assessment program. But purely from a digital record keeping perspective, how we've dealt with this, if we've liaised with our IT area and we were given a list of applications, now I won't call them business systems, I'll call them applications because that's what they were. A lot of them made absolutely no sense to me, and some of them were just things like the system that controls the keypad security. It doesn't actually do anything. It's just an application. It holds no records, doesn't create anything. It just runs a program or something like that. It was just this big long list of rubbish, if I could, you know, because really that's what it was, and we had to pull out the systems from that, which we did. communicated to the business units and asked them to fill in a tool, another tool, a self-assessment, or a digital record-keeping identification tool, basically. So what we actually did was we wanted to identify whether systems were high risk and whether they actually captured official records or created them in the first place, because not all systems did. We use the word official records instead of state records because we're not a state agency and people sort of say, yeah, but that's the government. So we tried to divorce that away from that term. So we were using the term official records. So what we basically did is we tried to do it piece by piece. We did an identification process first. We used the high-risk activities listed in the guidelines issued by State Records, which are on the digital record keeping, which are up on their website. And that was the first component. What risk level did that system have? And then, does it have records? What did you do before this system? Where are the records? And so forth. And out of that, we're able to cut that list of systems down. Some areas, which were very unheartening actually, sent me back multiple assessment tools because they had other systems I hadn't listed. So I was very pleased to actually get that. So we've done that process. Some of those areas defined what records they had as part of that, others didn't, so we had to put in another tool to sort of say, dismiss what records it holds. It's a very, very high level sort of process at the moment. We're not really, really delving in at this stage. The next stage of this is doing the assessment to see where the gaps are. So for the systems that we know must comply with the standard, we're doing an assessment, and that'll be the existing systems of high risk and any new systems that are coming in. We're looking at the record keeping functionality, metadata, and also getting a metadata map for those systems, and that's what requirements are in the standard. An interesting approach because we're trying to dumb it down to as much as we can, but it really leads on to what the previous speakers have said. No one person knows everything. And one of the problems that we're facing is our team knows records, but we don't know the intricacies of the business or the systems that we're looking at. The business owner, if you can actually identify who knows what's going on in the system, especially in systems that are used across the whole university for varying functions, knows the business and the records, but doesn't know how the system works and has no clue about the record keeping issues involved. And the IT people know nothing about records at all and know only a little bit about the business, but know very lot about the system. So really this approach is trying to mesh all of these three areas together and sort of start using the business owner as the key. You need to talk to the IT area to identify metadata, because you obviously don't know where this information is kept in the system, then you need to talk to the IT person, and we need to then work together. And we found that in doing this, and more often than not, we have had to meet with them and go through the questions, have a look at the system in some cases, and just work out whether, you know, what issues exist. And it's quite interesting because being a university, we're probably less affected by the transfer of records than government agencies, because we don't restructure with other universities very often, things like that. So there are going to be elements of the standards requirements that may be non-applicable at that point in time. So we're really looking at which ones have to apply and which ones might apply further down the track, and the risk levels of the systems that we're looking at. Action plans on that, again, this is a bit haphazard at the moment because we're still in the implementation and it's sort of done by system basis. We're looking at prioritising systems and decisions and how they will comply based on what resources we have, whether that be fixing a system, whether that be transferring a system's records into TRIM digitally, or whether that be that we're just going to print that and put it on file. Now, we do have some key systems that do that. I mean, one of our systems, our OH&S plans for business units are, we have a system which is the business units can use to implement their plan, put their plans together and so forth, but those plans have to be signed by the director, so once they're developed, they're signed and put on a hard copy file. We view that system as a tool to develop the documentation. So we've actually taken an approach to say, look, it may not be digital, but we need to ensure the records are captured. We also, of course, consider our TRIM license issues as well and how that's going to work. We look at the existing level of compliance, what isn't actually working in that system, and is that something that is going to be a risk element for the records, and obviously the nature of the records themselves. We're obviously going to put a lot more effort into our student and HR systems than we might put into a local FileMaker Pro database on a very low-risk business activity. So we do have to sort of prioritise those. to date, how are we going with that? Well, I couldn't say we're compliant just as yet, but we're working towards it. I have 69 separate systems listed on my spreadsheet, and the spreadsheet's in Trim, so we're capturing this, and we're actually getting a list of the systems, which is what Anne was referring to. So it's a way of listing the systems, what do they do, because the list I got from IT was atrocious. Half of them didn't even say what they did. What the people who own the system say that this system does. Who owns the system? Who's the system administrator? Who's the business process owner? So the owner's really the director or the dean, and then it juts down. Have they done their identification? Have they done the assessment? When was that done, and where's the folio in Trim? So we can link it all together and go back if we have to. Does it have to comply? Yes, no. Is it compliant? Yes, no. Why isn't it compliant? Or is it compliant? Is it official records are in Trim? Official records are on file? No, it's not compliant. There's a whole heap of different categories. And just general comments for all the other information we pick up along the way. All nicely colour-coded in red and green and orange, depending on how well they're doing. But I found that it's a very good tool to say, we go around, oh, this area in their self-assessment's got this system, and this system, and they've got no idea whether they comply. And I can look it up online and say, well, we've already assessed that system, and that system's fine, or that system's not. So it's actually something we can learn on. And I have kept systems in there as they decommission, so we can say this has been decommissioned and replaced with X, this has been decommissioned and replaced with nothing, or so forth, so we can actually have that listed. Out of those 69 systems, we have 25 compliant systems, and I use that term loosely. My view of compliance may differ. Again, I'm saying quite a few of these are already feeding data into Trim. Quite a few of these people are printing to put on file. Trim's obviously one of them, being compliant and so forth. So when you look at it more from not just the system being compliant, but whether we are capturing the records in a compliant system, we had already have 25 listed as compliant. Three are pending. Pending means I still haven't finished reviewing the final documentation, but they look like they will be compliant. Four are being decommissioned, and some were decommissioned as when we started this program, and again, that raises some issues. One of those, we had a database of Ku'ringai College of Advanced Education / Sydney College of Advanced Education student records up to 1990 in a very old Borland Paradox database or some sort of thing that was used to produce transcripts, were never used for that purpose, but still used to confirm verification of degrees. And I thought the easiest solution would just print all the transcripts off them and put them into Trim in some way, but the transcripts didn't identify the person. It only identified the name, but there was not enough information in the name to identify that two or three people with the same name and who exactly that person was. So I'd actually, knowing the technological obsolescence issues with that system because it just didn't work very well anyway, had actually got somebody to go in through the back, through the Access database table, put it into Access and generate the records with the proper metadata we required, which are now captured as PDF documents in Trim. Very fortunate I did, because when we moved from Novell to Active Directory this year, it turns out that that was one system that would not operate on the new operating system and would have basically been inaccessible completely. And this is one that we knew we had a lot of trouble with over time, but it's again, it's one of those legacy systems that it just turned out to be sitting in vital records on a disk in an off-site storage facility, used by a local person, and that's the only people who knew it even existed. And another one, our HR system, our old HR system, where not all records transferred to the new system, is obviously a legacy system that they want to get rid of. It was costing them $70,000 a year to keep the licences renewed, and we said you can't get rid of it. Some of those records are permanent. They did actually manage to give us copies of what was required and keep copies of their own business needs to decommission that system. But decommissioning is obviously a very big issue, and once the system's decommissioned, no one knows it's there. And that's one of the problems that we have. Now, that system does also include systems that are in development, so I can't determine yet whether they're going to or not going to be compliant. And the others are still being assessed. So, that's how we've sort of been trying to deal with the risk issues. Obviously can't go into all of it in detail. I do have one final slide which will not, unfortunately for people listening in, be on the online handout because there's probably copyright issues involved, but I put it up anyway because I think that it really demonstrates an interesting approach to risk management, and I've had it on my office wall for probably the last 10 years. So Dilbert's approach to records management. These valuable documents should be stored for 5 years, and after he leaves, the clerk throws them in the bin. This job gets so much easier when I realise that nobody ever asks for anything back. And that seems to be the approach a lot of people take. I don't need this anymore sorts of problem. So what we're really looking at is, it really depends obviously on how long things have to be kept, but it is really that balance of trying to work out, well, what are the not so much that no one will ever look at anything again, but what are the risks involved in not having that when you do need it. So that's probably pretty much it from us anyway. So thank you.